Now, during the past night and forenoon, the Pequod had gradually drifted into a sea which, by its occasional patches of yellow brit, gave unusual tokens of the vicinity of right whales, a species of the leviathan that but few supposed to be at this particular time lurking anywhere near. Tall spouts were seen to leeward, and two boats, stubs and flasks, were detached in pursuit. Pulling further and further away, they at last became almost invisible to the men at the masthead. But suddenly in the distance they saw a great heap of tumultuous white water, and soon after news came from aloft that one or both the boats must be fast. An interval passed, and the boats were in plain sight, in the act of being dragged right towards the ship by the towing whale. So close did the monster come to the hull that at first it seemed as if he meant it malice. But suddenly, going down in a maelstrom, within 3 rods of the planks, he wholly disappeared from view, as if diving under the keel.
"Cut! Cut!"
was the cry from the ship to the boats, which, for one instant, seemed on the point of being brought with a deadly dash against the vessel's side. But having plenty of line yet in the tubs, and the whale not sounding very rapidly, they paid out abundance of rope, and at the same time pulled with all their might so as to get ahead of the ship. For a few minutes the struggle was intensely critical, for while they still slacked out the tightened line in one direction and still plied their oars in another, the contending strain threatened to take them under. But it was only a few feet advance they sought to gain, and they stuck to it until they did gain it, when instantly a swift tremor was felt running like lightning along the keel as the strained line scraping beneath the ship suddenly rose to view under her bows, snapping and quivering, and so flinging off its drippings that the drops fell like bits of broken glass on the water, while the whale beyond also rose to sight, and once more the boats were free to fly. But the fagged whale abated his speed, and blindly altering his course, went round the stern of the ship, towing the two boats after him, so that they performed a complete circuit. Meanwhile they hauled more and more upon their lines, till, close flanking him on both sides, Stubb answered Flask with lance for lance, and thus round and round the Pequod the battle went, while the multitudes of sharks that had before swum round the sperm whale's body rushed to the fresh blood that was spilled, thirstily drinking at every new gash, as the eager Israelites did at the new bursting fountains that poured from the smitten rock. At last his spout grew thick, and with a frightful roll and vomit he turned upon his back a corpse. While the two headsmen were engaged in making fast cords to his flukes, and in other ways getting the mass in readiness for towing, some conversation ensued between them.
"I wonder what the old man wants with this lump of foul lard," said Stubb. "I don't know, but I heard that gamboge ghost of a Fadala saying so. Sink him! I never look at him at all. But if ever I get a chance of a dark night, and he's standing hard by the bulwarks and no one by, look down there, Flask," pointing into the sea with a peculiar motion of both hands. "Aye, will I. Flask, I take that Fadala to be the devil in disguise."
"He sleeps in his boots, don't he? He hasn't got any hammock, but I've seen him lay of nights in a coil of rigging."
"No doubt, and it's because of his cursed tail. He coils it down, do you see, in the eye of the rigging.
What's the old man have so much to do with him for?"
"Striking up a swap or a bargain, I suppose."
"Bargain? About what?"
"Why, do you see, the old man is hard bent after that white whale, and the devil there is trying to come round him and get him to swap away his silver watch or his soul or something of that sort, and then he'll surrender Moby Dick."
"How old do you suppose Fadala is, Stubb? Do you see that mainmast there?"
pointing to the ship.
"Well, that's the figure one. Now take all the hoops in the Pequod's hole and string 'em along in a row with that mast for aughts, do you see? Well, that wouldn't begin to be Fadala's age, nor all the coopers in creation couldn't show hoops enough to make aughts enough. But see here, Stubb, I thought you a little boasted just now that you meant to give Fadala a sea toss if you got a good chance. Now, if he's so old as all those hoops of yours come to, And if he's going to live forever, what good will it do to pitch him overboard? Tell me that. Give him a good ducking anyhow. But he'd crawl back. Duck him again and keep ducking him. Suppose he should take it into his head to duck you, though. Yes, and drown you. What then? I should like to see him try it. I'd give him such a pair of black eyes that he wouldn't dare to show his face in the Admiral's cabin again for a long time, let alone down the orlop there, where he lives, and hereabouts on the upper decks where he sneaks so much.
The boats were here hailed to tow the whale on the larboard side, where fluke chains and other necessaries were already prepared for securing him. In disposing of the body of a right whale, when brought alongside the ship, the same preliminary proceedings commonly take place as in the case of a sperm whale, only in the latter instance the head is cut off whole, but in the former the lips and tongue are separately removed and hoisted on deck, with all the well-known black bone attached to what is called the crown piece. Meantime, Fadala, the Parsee, was calmly eyeing the right whale's head, and ever and anon glancing from the deep wrinkles there to the lines in his own hand. And Ahab chanced so to stand that the Parsee occupied his shadow, while if the Parsee's shadow was there at all, it seemed only to blend with and lengthen Ahab's. As the crew toiled on, Laplandish speculations were bandied among them concerning all these passing things.